10. When she arrived at the orphanage, Lift finally figured out why it had been set up next to this open space at the mouth of the alleyway. The orphanage caretaker, the Stump, as she'd been called, had opened the doors and let the children out. They played here in the most boring playground ever, a set of amphitheater steps and some open floor. The children seemed to love it. They ran up and down the steps, laughing and giggling. Others sat in circles on the ground, playing games with painted pebbles. Laughter spread, like little silver fish that zipped through the air this way and that, played in the air some 10 feet up, a whole school of the starvin' things. There were lots of children, younger on average than Lift had assumed. Most, as she had been able to guess, were the kind that were different in the head, or they were missing an arm or leg, things like that. Lift idled near the wide alleyway mouth, near where two blind girls played a game. One would drop rocks of a variety of sizes and shapes, and the other would try to guess which was which, based on how they sounded when they hit the ground. The group of old men and women in chiquoise from the day before had again gathered at the back of the half-moon amphitheater seats, chatting and watching the children play.
"I thought you said orphanages were miserable," Wendell said, coating the wall beside her.
"Everyone gets happy for a little while when you let them go outside," Lift said, watching the Stump. The wizened old lady was scowling as she pulled a cart through the doors toward the amphitheater. More clemma bread rolls. Delightful. Those were only slightly better than gruel, which was only slightly better than cold socks. Still, Lift joined the others who got in line to accept their role. When her turn came, the Stump pointed to a spot beside the cart and didn't speak a word to her. Lift stepped aside, lacking the energy to argue. The Stump made sure every child got a role, then studied Lift before handing her one of the last two.
"Your second meal of three."
"Second?" Lift snapped.
"I ain't." "You got one last night."
"I didn't ask for it."
"You ate it."
The Stump pushed the cart away, eating the last of the rolls herself.
"Storming witch," Lift muttered, then found a spot on the stone seats. She sat apart from the regular orphans. She didn't want to be talked at.
"Mistress,"
Wendell said, climbing the steps to join her.
"I don't believe you when you say you left Azier because they were trying to dress you in fancy clothing and teach you to read."
"Is that so?" she said, chewing on her roll.
"You liked the clothing, for one thing. And when they tried to give you lessons, you seemed to enjoy the game of always being gone when they came looking. They weren't forcing you into anything. They were merely offering opportunities. The palace was not the stifling experience you imply."
"Maybe not for me," she admitted. "It was for Gox. They expected all kinds of things of the new emperor. Lessons, displays. People came to watch him eat every meal. They even got to watch him sleeping. In Azir, the emperor was owned by the people, like a friendly stray axe hound that seven different houses fed, all claiming her as their own."
"Maybe," Lift said. "I just didn't want people expecting so much from me. If you get to know people too long, they'll start depending on you."
"Oh, and you can't bear responsibility?"
"Of course I can't. I'm a starving street urchin."
"One who came here chasing down what appears to be one of the heralds themselves, gone mad, and accompanied by an assassin who has murdered multiple world monarchs. Yes, I believe that you must be avoiding responsibility."
"You giving me lip, Voidbringer?"
"I think so. Honestly, I don't know what that term means, but judging by your tone, I'd say that I'm probably giving you lip. And you probably deserve it."
She grunted in response, chewing on her food.
It tasted terrible, as if it had been left out all night.
Mama always told me to travel, Lift said, and go places while I'm young.
And that's why you left the palace?
Dunno, maybe.
Utter nonsense. Mistress, what is it really? Lift, what do you want?
She looked down at the half-eaten roll in her hand.
Everything is changing, she said softly. That's okay. Stuff changes. It's just that I'm not supposed to. I asked not to. She's supposed to give you what you ask.
The Night Watcher?
Wendell asked.
Lift nodded, feeling small, cold. Children played and laughed all around, and for some reason that only made her feel worse. It was obvious to her, though she'd tried ignoring it for years, that she was taller than she'd been when she'd first sought out the old magic 3 years ago. She looked beyond the kids, toward the street passing out front. A group of women bustled past, carrying baskets of yarn. A prim Alethi man strode in the other direction, with straight black hair and an imperious attitude. He was at least a foot taller than anyone else on the street. Workers moved along, cleaning the street, picking up trash. In the alleyway mouth, the stump had deposited her cart and was disciplining a child who had started hitting others. At the back of the amphitheater seats, the old men and women laughed together, one pouring cups of tea to pass around. They all seemed to just know what to do. Kremlings knew to scuttle. Plants knew to grow. Everything had its place. The only thing I've ever known how to do was hunt food, Lift whispered.
What's that, mistress?
It had been hard at first, feeding herself. Over time, she'd figured out the tricks. She'd gotten good at it. But once you weren't hungry all the time, what did you do? How did you know?
Someone poked at her arm, and she turned to see that a kid had scooted up beside her, a lean boy with his head shaved. He pointed at her half-eaten roll and grunted. She sighed and gave it to him. He ate eagerly.
I know you, she said, cocking her head. You're the one whose mother dropped him off last night.
Mother, he said, then looked at her. Mother, come back when?
Huh, so you can talk, Lift said. Didn't think you could, after all that staring around dumbly last night.
I,
the boy blinked, then looked at her. No drooling, must be a good day for him. A grand accomplishment.
Mother, come back?
Probably not, Lift said. Sorry, kid. They don't come back. What's your name?
Mick, the boy said.
He looked at her confused, as if searching and failing to figure out who she was.
We friends?
Nope, Lift said. You don't want to be my friend. My friends end up as emperors.
She shivered, then leaned in.
People pick his nose for him.
Mick looked at her blankly.
Yeah, I'm serious. They pick his nose. Like he's got this woman who does his hair and I peeked in, and I saw her sticking something up his nose. Like little tweezers she used to grab his boogies or something.
Lift shivered.
Being an emperor is real strange.
The stump dragged over one of the kids who'd been fighting and plopped him on the stone. Then, oddly, she gave him some earmuffs, like it was cold or something. He put them on and closed his eyes. The stump paused, looking toward Lift and Mick.
Making plans on how to rob me?
What? Lift said.
No. One more meal, the woman said, holding up a finger. Then she stabbed it toward Mick. And when you go, take that one. I know he's faking.
Faking?
Liv turned toward Mick, who blinked, dazed, as if trying to follow the conversation.
You're not serious. I can see through it when urchins are pretending to be sick in order to get food, the stump snapped. That one's no idiot. He's pretending.
She stomped away. Mick wilted, looking down at his feet.
I miss Mother.
Yeah, Lift said. Nice, eh?
Mick looked at her, frowning.
We get to remember ours, Lift said, standing. That's more than most like us get.
She patted him on the shoulder. A short time later, the stump called that playtime was over. She herded the kids into the orphanage for naps, though many were too old for that. The stump gave Mick a displeased eye as he entered, but let him in.
Lift remained in her seat on the stone, then smacked her hand at a kremling that had been inching across the step nearby. Starvin' thing dodged, then clicked its chitin legs as if laughing. They sure did have strange kremlings here. Not like the ones she was used to at all. Weird how you could forget you were in a different country until you saw the kremlings.
Mistress, Wendell said, have you decided what we're going to do?
Decide? Why did she have to decide? She usually just did things. She'd taken challenges as they'd arisen, gone places for no reason other than that she hadn't seen them before.
The old people who had been watching the children slowly rose, like ancient trees releasing their branches after a storm. One by one they trailed off until only one remained, wearing a black shikwa with the wrap pulled down to expose a face with a gray mustache.
Hey! Lift called to him. You still creepy, old man?
I am the man I was made to be, he said back.
Lift grunted, climbing from her spot and strolling over to him. Some of the kids from before had left their pebbles, with painted colors that were rubbing off. A poor kid's imitation of glass marbles. Lift kicked at them.
How do you know what to do? She asked the man, her hands shoved in her pockets.
About what, little one?
About everything, Lift said. Who tells you how to decide what to do with your time? Was it your parents who showed you? What's the secret?
The secret to what?
To being human, Lift said softly.
That, the man said, chuckling, I don't think I know. At least, not better than you do.
Lift looked at the sky, up along slot-like walls, scraped clean of vegetation but painted a dark green, as if in imitation of it.
It is strange, the man said. People get such a small amount of time. So many I've known say it. As soon as you feel you're getting a handle on things, the day is done, the night falls, and the light goes out.
Lift looked at him. Yep. Still creepy.
I guess when you're old and stuff, you get to thinking about being dead. Kind of like when a fellow's got to piss, he starts thinking about finding a convenient alleyway.
The man chuckled.
Your life may pass, but the organism that is the city will continue on. Little nose.
I'm not a nose, Lift said. I was being cheeky.
Nose, cheek. Both are on the face.
Lift rolled her eyes.
That's not what I meant either.
What are you then? An ear, perhaps?
Dunno, maybe.
No, not yet, but close.
Right, Lift said. And what are you?
I change, moment by moment. One moment I am the eyes that inspect so many people in this city. Another moment I am the mouth to speak the words of philosophy. They spread like a disease, and so at times I am the disease. Most diseases live. Did you know that?
You're not really talking about what you're talking about, are you?
Lift said.
I believe that I am.
Great.
Of all the people she'd chosen to ask about how to be a responsible adult, she'd picked the one with vegetable soup in place of brains. She turned to go.
"What will you make for this city, child?"
the man asked.
"That is part of my question. Do you choose, or are you simply molded by the greater good? And are you, as a city, a district of grand palaces, or are you a slum unto yourself?"
"If you could see inside me," Lift said, turning and walking backward so she faced the old man on the steps. "You wouldn't say things like that."
"Because?"
"Because at least slums know what they was built for." She turned and joined the flow of people on the street. 11.
"I don't think you understand how this is supposed to work," Wendell said, curling along the wall beside her. "Mistress, you don't seem interested in evolving our relationship."
She shrugged.
"There are words," Wendell said. "That's what we call them, at least. They're more ideas, living ideas, with power. You have to let them into your soul. Let me into your soul. You heard those skybreakers, right? They're looking to take the next step in their training. That's when, you know, they get a shard blade."
He smiled at her, the expression appearing in successive patterns of his growing vines along the wall as they chased her. Each image of the smile was slightly different, grown one after another beside her, like 100 paintings. They made a smile, and yet none of them was the smile. It was somehow all of them together. Or perhaps the smile somehow existed in the spaces between the images in the succession.
"There's only one thing I know how to do," Lift said. "And that's steal darkness's lunch, like I came to do in the first place."
"And, didn't we do that already?"
"Not his food. His lunch." She narrowed her eyes.
"Ah," Wendell said. "The person he's planning to execute. We're going to snatch that away from him."
Lift strolled along a side street and ended up passing into a garden, a bowl-like depression in the stone with four exits down different roads. Vines coated the leeward side of the wall, but they slowly gave way to brittles on the other side, shaped like flat plates for protection, but with planty stems that crept out and around the sides and up toward the sunlight. Wendell sniffed, crossing to the ground beside her.
"Barely any cultivation. Why, this is no garden. Whoever maintains this should be reprimanded."
"I like it," Lift said, lifting her hand toward some lifespren, which bobbed over her fingertips. The garden was crowded with people. Some were coming and going, while others lounged about, and still others begged for chips. She hadn't seen many beggars in the city. Likely there were all kinds of rules and regulations about when you could do it and how. She stopped, hands on hips.
"People here in Azir and Tashik, they love to write stuff down."
"Oh, most certainly," Wendell said, curling around some vines. Yes, mistress. These, at least, are fruit vines. I suppose that is better. It's not completely haphazard."
"And they love information," Lift said. "They love trading it with one another, right?"
"Most certainly. That is a distinguishing factor of their cultural identity, as your tutor said in the palace. You weren't there. I went to listen in your place."
"What people write can be important, at least to them," Lift said. "But what would they do with it all when they're done with it? Throw it out? Burn it?"
"Throw it out? Mother's vines. No, no, no. You can't just go throwing things out. They might be useful later on. If it were me, I'd find some place safe for them and keep them pristine in case I needed them.
Lift nodded, folding her arms. They'd have his same attitude. This city with everyone writing notes and rules, then offering to sell everyone else ideas all the time? Well, in some ways, this place was like a whole city of Windles. Darkness had told his hunters to find someone who was doing strange stuff. Awesome stuff. Well, in this city, they wrote down what kids had for breakfast. If somebody had seen something strange, they'd have written it down.
Lift scampered through the garden, brushing vines with her toes and causing them to writhe away. She hopped up onto the bench beside a likely target, an older woman in a brown chiqua, with the head portions pulled up and down to show a middle-aged face wearing makeup and displaying hints of styled hair. The woman wrinkled her nose immediately, which was unfair.
Lift had taken a bath back a week or so in Azier, and it had had soap and everything.
"Shoo," the woman said, waving fingers at her. "I've no money for you. Shoo, go away."
"Don't want money," Lift said. "I've got a deal to make. For information."
"I want nothing from you."
"I can give you nothing," Lift said, relaxing. "I'm good at that. I'll go away and give you nothing. You just gotta answer a question for me."
Lift hunched there on the bench, not moving. Then she scratched herself on the behind. The woman fussed, looking like she was going to leave, and Lift leaned in.
"You are disobeying beggar regulations," the woman snapped.
"Ain't begging. I'm trading."
"Fine. What do you want to know?"
"Is there a place," Lift said, "in this city where people stuff all the things they wrote down to keep them safe?"
The woman frowned, then raised her hand and pointed along a street, which led straight for a distance toward a mound-like bunker that rose from the center of the city. It was big enough to tower over the rest of the stuff around it, peeking up above the tops of the trenches.
"You mean like the Grand Indicium?" the woman asked.
Lift blinked, then cocked her head. The woman took the opportunity to flee to a different part of the garden.
"Has that always been there?"
Lift asked.
Yes, Windle said. "Of course it has."
"Really?"
Lift scratched her head.
"Huh."
12. Windle's vines wove up the side of an alleyway and Lift climbed, not caring if she drew attention. She hauled herself over the top edge into a field where farmers watched the sky and grumbled. The seasons had gone insane. It was supposed to be raining constantly, a bad time to plant as the water would wash away the seed paste. Yet it hadn't rained for days. No storms, no water. Lift walked along, passing farmers who spread paste that would grow to tiny polyps, which would eventually grow to the size of large rocks and fill to bursting with grain. Mash that grain, either by hand or by storm, and it made new paste. Lift had always wondered why she didn't grow polyps inside her stomach after eating, and nobody had ever given her a straight answer. The confused farmers worked with their chiquas pulled up to their waists. Lift passed, and she tried to listen, to hear. This was supposed to be their one time of year when they didn't have to work. Sure, they planted some treb to grow in cracks, as it could survive flooding. But they weren't supposed to have to plant lavis, talu, or clema. Much more labor-intensive, but also more profitable crops to cultivate. Yet here they were. What if it rained tomorrow and washed away all this effort? What if it never rained again? The city cisterns, which were glutted with water from the weeks of weeping, would not last forever. They were so worried she caught some fear spren, shaped like globs of purple goo, gathering around the mounds upon which the men planted. As a counterpoint, life spren broke off from the growing polyps and bobbed over to Lift, trailing in her wake, a swirling green glowing dust. Ahead of her, the grand indicium rose like the head of a bald man, seen peeking above the back of the chair he was sitting in. It was a huge, rounded mass of stone. Everything in the city revolved around this central point. Streets turned in this direction, curling up to it, and as Lift drew close, she could see that an enormous swath of stone had been cut away around the indicium. The round bunker wasn't much to look at, but it sure did seem secure from the storms.
"Yes, the land does slope away from this central point," Windle noted. "This focus had to be highest point of the city anyway, and I guess they figured they'd just accept that and make the central knob into a fortress."
A fortress for books? People could be so strange. Below, crowds of people, most of them Tashiki, flowed in and out of the building, which had numerous screw-like sloped walkways leading up to it. Lift settled down on the edge of the wall, feet hanging over.
"Kinda looks like the tip of some guy's dangly bits. Like some fellow had such a short sword everyone felt so sorry for him, they said, 'Hey, we'll make a huge statue to it. And even though it's tiny, it'll look real big.'"
Windle sighed.
"That wasn't crude," Lift noted. "That was being poetic. Old Whitehair said you can't be crass so long as you're talking about art. Then you're being elegant. That's why it's okay to hang pictures of naked ladies in a palace."
"Mistress, wasn't this the man who got himself intentionally swallowed by a Marabethian great shell?"
"Yep. Crazy as a box full of drunk minks, that one. I miss him."
She liked to pretend he hadn't actually gotten eaten. He'd winked at her as he'd jumped into the great shell's gaping maw, shocking the crowd. Windle piled around on himself, forming a face, eyes made of crystals, lips formed of a tiny network of vines.
"Mistress, what is our plan?"
"Plan?"
he sighed.
"We need to get into that building. Are you just going to do whatever strikes you?"
"Obviously."
"Might I offer some suggestions?"
"Long as it doesn't involve sucking someone's soul, Voidbringer."
"I'm not." "Look, mistress, that building is an archive. Knowing what I do of this region, the rooms in there will be filled with laws, records, and reports. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of them."
"Yeah," she said, making a fist. "Among all that, they'll have written down strange stuff for sure."
"And how precisely are we going to find the specific information we want?"
"Easy. You're going to read it."
"Read it?"
"Yep. We'll get in there, you'll read their books and stuff, and then we'll decide where strange events were. That will lead us to Darkness's lunch."
"Read it all?"
"Yep."
"Do you have any idea how much information is likely held in that place?"
Windle said.
"There will be hundreds of thousands of reports and ledgers. And to state it explicitly, yes, that's a number more than 10, so you can't count to it."
"I'm not an idiot," she snapped. "I got toes, too."
"It's still far more than I can read. I can't sift through all of that information for you. It's impossible. Not going to happen."
She eyed him.
"All right. Maybe I can get you one soul. Perhaps a tax collector. Except they ain't human. Would they work? Or would you need, like, three of them to make up one normal person's soul?
Mistress, I'm not bargaining.
Come on. Everyone knows Voidbringers like a good deal. Does it have to be someone important? Or can it be some dumb guy nobody likes?
I don't eat souls, Wendell exclaimed. I'm not trying to haggle with you. I'm stating facts. I can't read all the information in that archive. Why can't you just see that?
Oh, calm your tentacles, Lift said, swinging her feet, bouncing her heels against the rock cliff. I hear you. Can't help but hear you, considering how much you whine. Behind, the farmers were asking whose daughter she was and why she wasn't running them water like kids were supposed to. Lift scrunched up her face, thinking. Can't wait until night and sneak in, she muttered. Darkness wants the poor person killed by then. Besides, I bet those scribes work nights. They feed off ink. Why sleep when you could be writing up some new law about how many fingers people can use to hold a spoon? They know their stuff, though. They sell it all over the place. The viziers were always writing to them to get some answer to something. Mostly news around the world. She grinned, then stood up. You're right. We gotta do this differently.
Yes, indeed.
We gotta be smart about it. Devious. Think like a void bringer.
I didn't say...
Stop complaining, Lift said. I'm gonna go steal some important-looking clothes. 13. Lift liked soft clothing. These supple Azish coat and robes were the wardrobe equivalent of silky pudding. It was good to remember that life wasn't only about scratchy things. Sometimes it was about soft pillows, fluffy cake, nice words, mothers. The world couldn't be completely bad when it had soft clothes. This outfit was big for her, but that was okay. She liked it loose. She snuggled into the robes, sitting in the chair, crossing her hands in her lap, wearing a cap on her head. The entire costume was marked by bright colors woven in patterns that meant very important things. She was pretty sure of that, because everyone in Azir wouldn't shut up about their patterns. The scribe was fat. She needed like three shikwas to cover her. Either that or a shikwa made for a horse. Lift wouldn't have thought that they'd give scribes so much food. What did they need so much energy for? Pens were really light. The woman wore spectacles and kept her face covered, despite being in lands that knew Tashi. She tapped her pen against the table.
You're from the palace in Azir.
Yep, Lift said. Friend of the Emperor. I call him Gox, but they changed his name to something else. Which is okay, because Gox is kind of a dumb name and you don't want your emperor to sound dumb. She cocked her head. Can't stop that if he starts talking, though.
On the ground beside her, Wendell groaned softly.
Did you know, Lift said, leaning into the scribe, that they've got someone who picks his nose for him?
Young lady, I believe you are wasting my time.
That's pretty insulting, Lift said, sitting up straight in her seat, considering how little you people seem to do around here. It was true. This whole building was full of scribes rushing this way and that, carrying piles of paper to one windowless alcove or another. They even had this spren that hung out here, one Lift had only seen a couple of times. It looked like little ripples in the sky, like a raindrop in a pond, only without the rain and without the pond. Wendell called them concentration spren. Anyway, they had so much starvin' paper in the place that they needed parchment to cart it about for them. One passed in the hallway outside, a woman carrying a large box of papers. Those would be hauled to one of a billion scribes who sat at tables, surrounded by blinking span reeds. Wendell said they were answering inquiries from around the world,
passing information. The scribe with Lift was a slightly more important one. Lift had gotten into the room by doing as Wendell suggested, not talking. The viziers did that kind of thing, too, nodding, not saying anything. She'd presented the card, where she'd sketched the words that Wendell had painted for her with vines. The people at the front had been intimidated enough to lead her through the hallways to this room, which was larger than others, but it still didn't have any windows. The wall had a brownish-yellow stain on the white paint, though, and you could pretend it was sunlight. On the other wall was a shelf that held a really long rack of span reeds. Some Azish tapestries hung at the back. This scribe was some kind of liaison with the government over in Azir. Once in the room, though, Lift had been forced to talk. She couldn't avoid that anymore. She just needed to be persuasive.
"What unfortunate person," the large scribe asked, "did you mug to get that clothing?"
"Like I'd take it off someone while they were wearing it," Lift said, rolling her eyes. "Look, just pull out one of those glowing pens and write to the palace. Then we can get on to the important stuff. My Voidbringer says you got tons of paper in here we're going to have to look through."
The woman stood up. Lift could practically hear her chair breathe a sigh of relief. The woman pointed toward the door dismissively. But at that moment, a lesser scribe, spindly and wearing a yellow shikwa and a strange brown and yellow cap, entered and whispered in the woman's ear. She looked displeased. The newcomer shrugged awkwardly, then hurried back out. The fat woman turned to eye Lift.
"Give me the names of the viziers you know in the palace."
"Well, there's Dalki. She's got a funny nose like a spigot. And Big A, I can't say his real name. It's got those choking sounds in it. And Daddy Sagbutt, but he's not really a vizier. They call him a scion, which is a different kind of important. Oh, and Fat Lips, she's in charge of them. She doesn't really have fat lips, but she hates it when I call her that."
The woman stared at Lift. Then she turned and walked to the door.
"Wait here."
She stepped outside. Lift leaned over toward the ground.
"How am I doing?"
"Terribly," Wendell said.
"Yeah, I noticed."
"It's almost as if," Wendell said, "it would have been useful to learn how to talk politely like the viziers kept telling you."
"Blah, blah," Lift said, going to the door and listening. Outside, she could faintly hear the scribes talking.
"Matches the description given by the captain of the immigration watch to search for in the city,"
one of them said.
"She showed up right here. We've sent for the captain, who luckily is here for her debriefing."
"Damnation," Lift whispered, pulling back. "They're on to us, Voidbringer."
"I should never have helped you with this insane idea."
Lift crossed the room to the racks of span reeds. They were all labeled.
"Get over here and tell me which one we need."
Wendell grew up the wall and sent vines across the nameplates.
"My, my, these are important reeds. Let's see. Third one over. It will go to the Royal Palace scribes."
"Great," Lift said, grabbing it and scrambling to the table.
She set it into the right spot on the board. She'd seen this done tons of times, and twisted the ruby on the top of the reed. It was answered immediately. Palace scribes weren't often away from their reeds. They'd sooner give up their fingers. Lift grabbed the span reed and placed it against the paper.
"Oh, for cultivation's sake," Wendell said. "You didn't pay attention at all, did you?"
"Nope."
"Tell me what you want to say."
She set it out, and he again made vines grow across the table in the right shapes. Pen gripped in her fist, she copied the words, one stupid letter at a time. It took forever. Writing was ridiculous.
Couldn't people just talk? Why invent a way where you didn't actually have to see people to tell them what to do? "This is Lyft," she wrote. "Tell Fat Lips I need her. I'm in trouble. And somebody get Gawx. If he's not having his nose picked right..."
The door opened and Lyft yelped, twisting the ruby and scrambling off the table. Beyond the door was a large gathering of people. 5 scribes, including the fat one, and 3 guards. One was the woman who ran the guard post into the city.
"Storms," Lyft thought. That was fast.
She ducked toward them.
"Careful," the guard shouted. "She's slippery."
Lyft made herself awesome, but the guard shoved the scribes into the room and slammed the door behind her. Lyft got between their legs, slick and sliding easily, but slammed right into the door as it closed. The guard lunged for her. Lyft yelped, coating herself with awesomeness, so that when she got grabbed, her wide-sleeved Azish coat came off, leaving her in a robe-like skirt with trousers underneath, and then her normal shirts. She scuttled across the ground, but the room wasn't large. She tried to scramble around the perimeter, but the guard captain was right on her.
"Mistress," Wendell cried. "Oh, mistress, don't get stabbed. Are you listening? Avoid getting hit by anything sharp or blunt, actually."
Lyft growled as the other guards slipped in, then quickly shut the door. One prowled around on either side of the room. She dodged one way, then the other, then punched at the shelf with the span reeds, causing the scribe to scream as several toppled over. Lyft bolted for the door. The guard captain tackled her, and another piled on top of her. Lyft squirmed, making herself awesome, squeezing through their fingers. She just had to...
"Tashi," a scribe whispered. "God of gods and binder of the world."
Awesome spren like a ring of blue smoke burst out around her head. Lyft popped out of the grips of the guards, stepping up to stand on one of their backs, which gave her a good view of the desk. The span reed was writing.
"Took them long enough," she said, then hopped off the guards and sat in the chair.
The guard stood up behind her, cursing.
"Stop, captain," the fat scribe said.
She looked at the spindly scribe in yellow.
"Go get another span reed to the Azish Palace. Get 2. We need confirmation."
"For what?" the scribe said, walking to the desk.
The guard captain joined them, reading what the pen said. Then, slowly, all 3 looked up at Lyft with wide eyes.
"To whom it may concern," Wendell read, spreading his vines up onto the table over the paper. "It is decreed that I, Prime Akasix Yanagon the First, Emperor of all Makabak, decree that the young woman known as Lyft is to be shown every courtesy and measure of respect. You will obey her as you would myself, and bill to the Imperial account any charges that might be incurred by her foray in your city. What follows is a description of the woman and 2 questions only she can answer as proof of authentication. But know this, if she is harmed or impeded in any way, you will know Imperial wrath."
"Thanks, Gawx," Lyft said, then looked up at the scribes and guards. "That means you gotta do what I say."
"And what is it you want?" the fat scribe asked.
"Depends," Lyft said. "What were you going to have for lunch today?"
14. 3 hours later, Lyft sat in the center of the fat scribe's desk, eating pancakes with her hands and wearing the spindly scribe's hat. A swarm of lesser scribes searched through reports on the ground in front of her. Piles of books scattered about like broken crab shells after a fine feast. The fat scribe stood beside the desk, reading to Lift from the span reed that wrote Gawx's end of their conversation. The woman had finally pulled down her face wrap, and it turned out she was pretty, and a lot younger than Lift had assumed.
"I'm worried, Lift," the fat scribe read to her. "Everyone here is worried. There are reports coming in from the west now. Steen and Alm have seen the new storm. It's happening like the Alethi warlord said it would, a storm of red lightning, blowing the wrong direction."
The woman looked up at Lift.
"He's right about that.
Say it," Lift said.
"Your pancakefulness
rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it?"
"His Imperial Excellency is correct about the arrival of a strange new storm. We have independent confirmation of that from contacts in Shinovar and Eerie. An enormous storm with red lightning blowing in from the west."
"And the monsters?" Lift said. "Things with red eyes in the darkness?"
"Everything is in chaos," the scribe said. Her name was Genna. "We've had trouble getting straight answers. We had some inkling of this from reports on the east coast when the storm struck there before blowing into the ocean. Most people thought those reports exaggerated and that the storm would blow itself out. Now that it has rounded the planet and struck in the west, well, the prince is reportedly preparing a diktat of emergency for the entire country."
Lift looked at Windle, who was coiled on the desk beside her.
"Void bringers," he said, voice small. "It's happening. Sweet virtue. The desolations have returned."
Genna went back to reading the span read from Gawx.
"This is going to be a disaster, Lift. Nobody is ready for a storm that blows the wrong direction. Almost as bad, though, are the Alethi. How do the Alethi know so much about it? Did that warlord of theirs summon it somehow?"
Genna lowered the paper. Lift chewed on her pancake. It was a dense variety with mashed-up paste in the center that was too sticky and salty. The one beside it was covered in little crunchy seeds. Neither were as good as the other two varieties she'd tried over the last few hours.
"When's it going to hit?" Lift asked.
"The storm? It's hard to judge, but it's slower than a high storm by most reports. It might arrive in Aesir and Tashik in 3 or 4 hours.
"Write this to Gawx," Lift said around bites of pancake. "They got good food here, these pancakes, with lots of variety. One has sugar in the center."
The scribe hesitated.
"Write it," Lift said, "or I'll make you call me more silly names."
Genna sighed, but complied. "Lift," she read, as the span reed wrote the next line from Gawx, who undoubtedly had about 15 viziers and scions standing around telling him what to say, then writing it when he agreed. "This isn't the time for idle conversation about food."
"Sure it is," Lift replied. "We gotta remember. Storm might be coming, but people will still need to eat. The world ends tomorrow, but the day after that, people are going to ask what's for breakfast. That's your job."
"And what about the stories of something worse?" he wrote back. "The Alethi are warning about Parshmen, and I'm doing what I can on such short notice. But what of the void bringers they say are in the storms?"
Lift looked at the room packed with scribes.
"I'm working on that part," she said.
As Genna wrote it, Lift stood up, wiping her hands on her fancy robes.
"Hey, all you smart people, what you found?"
The scribes looked up at her.
"Mistress," one said,
We don't have any idea what we're even looking for.
Strange stuff.
What kind of strange stuff? Asked the scribe in yellow, the spindly fellow, who looked silly and balding without a hat.
Unusual things happen every day in the city. Do you want the report of the man who claims his pig was born with two heads? What about the man who says he saw the shape of Yezir in the lichen on his wall? The woman who had a premonition her sister would fall and then she fell?
Nah, Lift said. That's normal strange.
What's abnormal strange, then? He asked, exasperated.
Lift started glowing. She called upon her awesomeness, so much that it started radiating out of her skin like she was a starvin' sphere. Beside her, the seeds on top of her uneaten pancake sprouted, twisting about one another and growing long, twisting vines that curled around one another and spat out leaves.
Something like this, Lift said, then glanced to the side.
Great.
She'd ruined the pancake.
The scribes stared at her in awe, so she clapped loudly, sending them back to their work. Wendell sighed, and she knew what he must be thinking. 3 hours, and nothing relevant so far. He'd been right.
Yeah, they wrote stuff down in this city. That was the problem. They wrote it all down.
There's another message from the Emperor for you, Genna said.
Your pancake...
Storms, that sounds stupid.
Lift grinned, then looked over at the paper. The words were written in a flowing, elegant hand. Probably Fat Lips.
Lift, Genna read. Are you going to come back? We miss you here.
Even Fat Lips? Lift asked.
Vizier Noora misses you too. Lift, this is your home now. You don't need to live on the streets anymore.
What am I supposed to do there if I do come back?
Anything you want, Gawx wrote. I promise.
That was the problem.
I don't know what I'm going to do yet, she said,
feeling strangely isolated, despite the room full of people.
We'll see.
Genna eyed her at that. She apparently thought that what the Emperor of Aesir wanted, he should get, and little Reshi girls shouldn't make a habit of denying him. The door cracked open, and the guard captain from the city watch peeked in. Lift leaped off the desk, running over to her, then hopping up to see what she was holding. A report. Great. More words.
What did you find? Lift said eagerly.
You are right, the captain said. One of my colleagues in the quarters watch has been watching the Tashi's light orphanage.
The woman who runs it.
The stump, Lift said.
Meanest thing. Eats the bones of children for afternoon snack. Once had a staring contest with a painting and won.
Is being investigated. She's running some kind of money laundering scheme, though the details are confusing. She's been seen trading spheres for ones of lesser value, a practice that would end with her bankrupt if she didn't have another income scheme. The report says she takes money from criminal enterprises as donations, then secretly transfers them to other groups after taking a cut to help confuse the trail of spheres. There's more, too. Either way, the children are a front to keep attention away from her practices.
I told you, Lift said, snatching the paper. You should arrest her and spend all her money on soup. Give me half for telling you where to look, and I won't tell nobody.
The guard raised her eyebrows.
We can write down that we did it if you want, Lift said. That'll make it official.
I'll ignore the suggestions of bribery, coercion, extortion, and state embezzlement, the captain said. As for the orphanage, I don't have jurisdiction over it, but I assure you my colleagues will be moving against this stump soon.
Good enough, Lift said,
climbing back up on the desk before her legion of scribes.
So what have you found? Anybody glowing?
Like they're some stormin' benevolent force for good or some such creme?
This is too large a project to spring on us without warning, the fat scribe complained. Mistress, this is the sort of research we normally have months to work on. Give us 3 weeks and we can prepare a detailed report.
We ain't got 3 weeks. We barely got 3 hours.
It didn't matter. Over the next few hours, she tried cajoling, threatening, dancing, bribing, and, as a last-ditch crazy option, remaining perfectly quiet and letting them read. As the time slipped away, they found nothing and everything at the same time. There were tons of vague oddities in the guard reports. Stories of a man surviving a fall from too high, a complaint of strange noises outside a woman's window, Spren acting odd every morning outside a woman's house, unless she left out a bowl of sugar water. Yet none of them had more than one witness, and in each case the guard had found nothing specifically strange other than hearsay. Each time a weirdness came up, Lift itched to scramble out the door, squeeze through a window, and go running to find the person involved. Each time, Wendell cautioned patience. If all these reports were true, then basically every person in the city would have been a surge binder. What if she ran off chasing one of the 100 reports that were due to ordinary superstition? She'd spend hours and find nothing. Which was exactly what she felt like she was doing. She was annoyed, impatient, and out of pancakes. I'm sorry, mistress, Wendell said, as they rejected a report about a Vaden woman who claimed her baby had been blessed by Tashi himself to have lighter skin than his father to make him more comfortable interacting with foreigners. I don't think any of these is more likely a sign than the one before. I'm beginning to feel we just need to pick one and hope we get lucky.
Lift hated luck these days. She was having trouble convincing herself that she hadn't hit an unlucky age of her life, so she'd given up on luck. She'd even traded her lucky sphere for a piece of hog's cheese. The more she thought of it, the more that luck seemed the opposite of being awesome. One was something you did, the other was something that happened to you no matter what you did. Of course, that didn't mean luck didn't exist. You either believed in that, or you believed in what those Vorin priests were always saying, that poor people were chosen to be poor on account of them being too dumb to ask the Almighty to make them born with heaps of spheres. So what do we do? Lift said.
Pick one of these accounts, I guess, Wendell said. Any of them, except maybe that one about the baby. I suspect that the mother might not be honest.
You think? Lift looked over the papers spread before her, papers she couldn't read, each detailing a report of some vague curiosity. Storms. Pick the right one and she could save a life, maybe find someone else who could do what she did. Pick the wrong one, and darkness or his servants would execute an innocent, quietly, with nobody to witness their passing or to remember them. Darkness. She hated him suddenly, with a seething ferocity that startled even her with its intensity. She didn't think she'd ever actually hated anyone before. Him, though. Those cold eyes that seemed to refuse all emotion. She hated him more for the fact that it seemed like he did what he did without a shred of guilt.
Mistress? Wendell asked. What do you choose?
I can't choose, she whispered. I don't know how.
Just pick one.
I can't. I don't make choices, Wendell.
Nonsense. You do it every day.
No, I just...
She went where the winds blew.
Once you made a decision, you were committed. You were saying you thought this was right. The door to their chamber was flung open. A guard there, one Lift didn't recognize, was sweating and puffing.
Status 5 emergency diktat from the prince to be disseminated through the nation immediately. State of emergency in the city. Storm blowing from the wrong direction. Projected to hit within 2 hours. All people are to get off the streets and go to storm bunkers, and Parsh men are to be imprisoned or exiled into the storm. He wants the alleys of Yedah and Slot cities evacuated, and orders government officials to report to their assigned bunkers to do headcounts, draft reports, and mediate confusion or evacuation disputes. Find a draft of these orders posted at each muster station, with copies being distributed now.
The scribes in the room looked up from their work, then immediately began packing away books and ledgers.
"Wait," Lift said as the runner moved on. "What are you doing?"
"You've just gotten overruled, little one," Genna said. "Your research will have to be put on hold."
"How long?"
"Until the prince decides to step down our state of emergency," she said, quickly gathering the span reeds from her shelf and packing them in a padded case.
"But the Emperor," Lift said,
grabbing a note from Gox and wagging it.
"He said to help me."
"We'll gladly help you to a storm bunker," the guard captain said.
"I need help with this problem. He ordered you to obey."
"We, of course, listen to the Emperor," Genna said. "We will listen very well."
"But not necessarily obey." The viziers had explained this. Azir might claim to be an empire, and most of the other countries in the region played along, just like you might play along with the kid who says he's team captain during a game of rings. As soon as his demands grew too extravagant, though, he might find himself talking to an empty alleyway. The scribes were remarkably efficient. It wasn't too long before they'd ushered Lift into the hallway, burdened her with a handful of reports she couldn't read, then split to run to their various duties. They left her with one junior subscribe who couldn't be much older than Lift. Her job was to show Lift to a storm bunker. Lift ditched the girl at the first junction she could, scuttling down a side path as the girl explained the emergency to a bleary-eyed old scholar in a brown shikwa. Lift stripped off her nice Azish clothing and dumped it in a corner, leaving her in trousers, shirt, and unbuttoned overshirt. From there, she set off into a less populated section of the building. In the large corridors, scribes gathered and shouted to one another. She wouldn't have expected such a ruckus from a bunch of dried-up old men and women with ink for blood. It was dark in here, and Lift found reason to wish she hadn't traded away her lucky sphere. The hallways were marked by rugs with Azish patterns to differentiate them, but that was about it. Periodic sphere lanterns lined the walls, but only every fifth one had an infused sphere in it. Everyone was still starving for stormlight. She spent a good minute holding to one, chewing on its latch and trying to get it undone, but they were locked up tight. She continued down the hallway, passing room after room, each stuffed with paper, though there weren't as many bookshelves as Lift had expected to find. It wasn't like a library. Instead, there were walls full of drawers that you could pull open to find stacks of pages. The longer she walked, the quieter it became, until it was like she was walking through a mausoleum for trees. She crinkled up the papers in her hand and shoved them in her pocket. There were so many, she couldn't properly get her hand in as well.
"Mistress," Windel said from the floor beside her, "we don't have much time."
"I'm thinking," Lift said,
which was a lie. She was trying to avoid thinking.
"I'm sorry the plan didn't work," Windel said.
Lift shrugged.
"You don't want to be here anyway. You want to be off gardening."
"Yes, I had the most lovely gallery of boots planned," Windel said. "But I suppose we can't sit around preparing gardens while the world ends, can we?"
and if I'd been placed with that nice Iriali, I wouldn't be here, would I? And that radiant you're trying to save, they'd be as good as dead.
Probably as good as dead anyway.
But still. Still worth trying, right?
Stupid cheerful Voidbringer.
She glanced at him, then pulled out the wads of paper.
These are useless. We gotta start over with a new plan.
And with much less time. Sunset is coming along with that storm. What do we do?
Lif dropped the papers.
Somebody knows where to go. That woman who was talking to Darkness, his apprentice, she said she had an investigation going. Sounded confident.
Huh, Wendell said. You don't suppose her investigation involved a bunch of scribes searching records, do you?
Lif cocked her head.
That would be the smart thing to do, Wendell said. I mean, even we came up with it.
Lif grinned, then ran back in the direction she'd come from. 15.
Yes, the fat scribe said, flustered after looking through a book. It was Bidlel's team, room 232. The woman you describe hired them 2 weeks ago for an undisclosed project. We take the secrecy of our clients very seriously. She sighed, closing the book. Barring Imperial mandate.
Thanks, Lif said, giving the woman a hug. Thanks, 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 thanks.
I wish I knew what all this meant. Storms. You'd think I would be the one who got told everything, but half the time I get the sense that even kings are confused by what the world throws at them.
She shook her head and looked to Lif, who was still hugging her.
I am going to my assigned station now. You'd be wise to seek shelter.
Sure will, great bye,
Lif said, letting go and dashing out of the room full of ledgers. She scurried through the hallway, directly away from the steps down to the Indicium's storm shelter. Genna poked her head out into the hallway.
Bidlel will have already evacuated. The door will be locked. She paused. Don't break anything.
Voidbringer, Lif said. Can you find whatever number she just said?
Yes.
Good, because I don't got that many toes.
They hurried through the cavernous Indicium, which was already feeling empty. Only a half hour or so since the diktat, Wendell was keeping track, and everyone was on their way out. People locked the doors in the advent of a storm and moved on to safe places. For those with regular homes, those homes would do. But for the poor, that meant storm bunkers.
Poor Parshmen. There weren't many in the city. Not as many as in Azamir, but by the prince's orders they were being gathered and turned out. Left for the storm, which Lif considered hugely unfair. Nobody listened to her complaints about that, though. And Wendell implied, well, they might be turning into Voidbringers. And he would know. Still didn't seem fair. She wouldn't leave him out in a storm, even if he claimed it probably wouldn't hurt them. She followed Wendell's vines as he led her up two floors, then started counting off rows. The floor on this level was of painted wood, and it felt weird to walk on it. Wooden floors. Wouldn't they break and fall through? Wooden buildings always felt so flimsy to her, and she stepped lightly just in case. It... Lif frowned, then crouched down, looking one way, then the other. What was that?
221, Wendell said. 222.
Voidbringer,
Lif hissed.
Shut up.
He twisted about, creeping up the wall near her. Lif pressed her back against the wall, then ducked around a corner into a side corridor and pressed her back against that wall instead. Booted feet thumped on the carpet.
I can't believe you called that a lead, a woman's voice said.
Lift recognized it as Darkness's trainee.
Weren't you in the guard?
Things work differently in Yazir, a man snapped.
The other trainee.
Here everyone is too coy. They should just say what they mean.
You expect a Tashiki Street informant to be perfectly clear?
Sure. Isn't that his job?
The two strode past, and thankfully didn't glance down the side hall toward Lift.
Storms. Those uniforms, with the high boots, stiff eastern jackets, and large cuffed gloves, were imposing. They looked like generals on the field.
Lift itched to follow and see where they went. She forced herself to wait. Sure enough, a few seconds later, a quieter figure passed in the hallway. The assassin, clothing tattered, head bowed, with that large sword, it had to be some kind of shard blade, resting on his shoulder.
I do not know, Sword Nimi, he said softly. I don't trust my own mind any longer.
He paused, stopping as if listening to something.
That is not comforting, Sword Nimi. No, it is not.
He trailed after the other two, leaving a faint afterimage glowing in the air. It was almost imperceptible, less pronounced now that he was moving than it had been in Darkness's headquarters.
Oh, mistress, Windel said, curling up to her. I nearly expired of fright. The way he stopped there in the hallway, I was sure he'd seen me somehow.
At least the hallways were dark, with those sphere lanterns mostly out. Lift nervously slipped into the hallway and followed the group. They stopped at the right door and one produced a key. Lift had expected them to ransack the place, but of course they wouldn't need to do that. They had legal authority. Actually, so did she. How bizarre. Darkness's two apprentices stepped into the room. The assassin in white remained outside in the hallway. He settled down on the floor across from the doorway, his strange shard blade across his lap. He sat mostly still, but when he did move, he left that fading afterimage behind. Lift pulled into the side corridor again, back pressed to the wall. People shouted somewhere distant in the grand indecision. Calls for people to be orderly.
I have to get into that room, Lift said. Somehow.
Windel huddled down on the ground, vines tightening around him. Lift shook her head.
That means getting past the starving assassin himself. Storms.
I'll do it, Windel whispered.
Maybe, Lift said, barely paying attention. I can make some sort of distraction. Send him off chasing it? But then that would alert the two in the room.
I'll do it, Windel repeated.
Lift cocked her head, registering what he'd said. She glanced down at him.
The distraction?
No.
Windel's vines twisted about one another, tightening into knots.
I'll do it, mistress. I can sneak into the room. I don't believe their spren will be able to see me.
You don't know?
No.
Sounds dangerous.
His vines scrunched as they tightened against one another.
You think?
Yeah, totally, Lift said, then peeked around the corner. Something's wrong about that guy in white. Can you get killed, Voidbringer?
Destroyed,
Windel said.
Yes, it's not the same as for a human, but I have seen spren who,
he whimpered softly.
Maybe it is too dangerous for me.
Maybe.
Windel settled down, coiled about himself.
I'm going anyway, he whispered.
She nodded.
Just listen.
Memorize what those two in there say, and get back here quick. If something happens, scream loud as you can.
Right. Listen and scream. I can listen and scream. I'm good at these things.
He made a sound like taking a deep breath, though so far as she knew, he didn't need to breathe. Then he shot out into the corridor, a vine laced with crystal that grew along the corner where wall met floor. Little offshoots of green crept off his sides, covering the carpeting. The assassin didn't look up. Wendell reached the doorway into the room with the two Skybreaker apprentices. Lift couldn't hear a word of what was being said inside. Storms, she hated waiting. She'd built her life around not having to wait for anyone or anything. She did what she wanted when she wanted. That was the best, right? Everyone should be able to do what they wanted. Of course, if they did that, who would grow food? If the world was full of people like Lift, wouldn't they just leave halfway through planting to go catch lurgs? Nobody would protect the streets or sit around in meetings. Nobody would learn to write things down or make kingdoms run. Everyone would scurry about eating each other's food until it was all gone and the whole heap of them fell over and died. You knew that, a part of her said, standing up inside, hands on hips with a defiant attitude. You knew the truth of the world, even when you went and asked not to get older. Being young was an excuse, a plausible justification. She waited, feeling itchy because she couldn't do anything. What were they saying in there? Had they spotted Wendell? Were they torturing him? Threatening to cut down his gardens or something? Listen, a part of her whispered. But of course she couldn't hear anything. She wanted to just rush in there, make faces at them all, then drag them on a chase through the starving building. That would be better than sitting here with her thoughts, worrying and condemning herself at the same time. When you were always busy, you didn't have to think about stuff. Like how most people didn't run off and leave when the whim struck them. Like how your mother had been so warm and kindly, so ready to take care of everyone. It was incredible that anyone on Roshar should be as good to people as she'd been. She shouldn't have had to die. Least, she should have had someone half as wonderful as she was to take care of her as she wasted away. Someone other than Lift, who was selfish, stupid, and lonely. She tensed up, then prepared to bolt around the corner. Wendell, however, finally zipped out into the hallway. He grew along the floor at a frantic pace, then rejoined her, leaving a trail of dust by the wall as his discarded vines crumbled. Darkness's two apprentices left the room a moment later, and Lift pulled back into the side corridor with Wendell. In the shadows here, she crouched down against the floor to avoid standing out against the distant light. The woman and man in uniforms strode past a moment later and didn't even glance down the hallway. Lift relaxed, glancing toward Wendell. Then the assassin passed by. He stopped, then looked down the hallway, hand resting on his sword hilt. Lift's breath caught. Don't become awesome. Don't become awesome. If she used her powers in these shadows, she'd glow, and he'd spot her for sure. All she could do was crouch there as the assassin narrowed his eyes, strangely shaped, like they were too big or something. He reached to a pouch at his belt, then tossed something small and glowing into the hallway. A sphere. Lift panicked, uncertain if she should scramble away, grow awesome, or just remain still. Fear spren boiled up around her, lit by the sphere as it rolled near her, and she knew, meeting the assassin's gaze, that he could see her. He pulled his sword out of the sheath a fraction of an inch. Black smoke poured from the blade, dropping toward the floor and pooling at his feet. Lift felt a sudden terrible nausea. The assassin studied her, then snapped the sword into its sheath again. Remarkably, he left, following after the other two, that faint afterimage trailing behind him. He didn't speak a word, and his footfalls on the carpet were almost silent. A faint breeze compared to the clomping of the other two, which Lift could still hear farther down the corridor. In moments, all three of them had entered the stairwell and were gone.
"Storms," Lift said, flopping backward on the carpet. "Storming mother of the world and father of storms above, he about made me die of fright."
"I know," Wendell said. "Did you hear me not whimpering?"
"No."
"I was too frightened to even make a sound."
Lift sat up, then mopped the sweat from her brow.
"Wow, okay, well, that was something. What did they talk about?"
"Oh," Wendell said, as if he'd forgotten completely about his mission. "Mistress, they had an entire study done. Research for weeks to identify oddities in the city."
"Great. What did they determine?"
"I don't know."
Lift flopped back down.
"They talked over a whole lot of things I didn't understand," Wendell said. "But, Mistress, they know who the person is. They're heading there right now to perform an execution."
He poked at her with a vine.
"So, maybe we should follow?"
"Yeah, okay," Lift said. "Guess we can do that. Shouldn't be too hard, right?"